Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in for practical lessons, compelling theories, and plenty of inspiration. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Hi, everybody. My name is Khawaja Shan, co-founder and CEO at Momento. I'm very excited to be here with Shane and Luke to talk about their exciting new book. So why don't we get started with a little bit of history and some introductions about you guys. Luke, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, thanks so much, Khawaja. Great to be here and talking about the book. My name's Luke Hedger. I like to describe myself as a software engineer, plain and simple. I like the nuts and the bolts and being deep in the detail. But I also dabble in writing books, and that's why we're here today. I've been working with AWS serverless probably for about 5 or 6 years now, and I'm an AWS community builder, and that's what I love most about serverless is the community around it and having these thoughtful, interesting discussions and really kind of pushing the envelope forward. So great to be here.
Shane?
Yeah, thanks, Khawaja. I'm an engineer at heart, and I started my journey long ago. I've been in the industry for over 30 years, starting as a software engineer. I've been through big and small enterprises and traveling pretty much from the procedural language days of C all the way to JavaScript, hopping through, you know, object-orientedness, C++, Java, ecosystem, et cetera, et cetera. And these days, my focus is mostly on AWS and specializing on serverless. And I also share what I learned with the community via articles and conference talks, so on and so forth. And that's kind of, you know, became the reason why we are here and why I wrote the book with Luke, and I'm also an AWS serverless hero. That's a recognition for people who engage with the community, spreading the technology around. Yeah, so excited to be here.
Yeah, so we've got a community builder and AWS serverless hero in our midst. So that's exciting for everybody that's tuning in. Where are you all located? Shane, with you and Luke?
I'm based in London, but outside of London.
Okay.
Yep, I'm in North London myself. Born in South London, so I traded the South for the North, betrayed my roots.
So you're both, you know, in the AWS ecosystem for a very long time. And in that ecosystem, you can evangelize best practices and, you know, really get passionate about teaching people how to use these capabilities appropriately. There's so many forums and media outlets to do that. You can have podcasts, you can write articles. Why write a book and why write it on this topic?
Good question. I'll make a start and hand over to Luke. I think it's partly because of my background. Because I've been through several teams and decades of, building software. From early days, I've been used to the software development lifecycle, the typical SDLC, and going through the different phases of engineering applications. But when I started to adopt or, you know, learn serverless and to develop serverless applications, I noticed that because of several reasons, which we will talk later, many in the industry were considering as a toy to develop something quickly and get it over. But I noticed that in order to be successful and sustainable with the development process, there has to be a proper, you know, process or methodology in place. That was in my mind as I started sharing the knowledge. And then as I was traveling across different places for conferences, I gathered or observed from engineers speaking to me that, oh, there is a real need for people to understand what this technology is and how can we build better solutions, not just like, you know, throw something together and get it done. No, the enterprises don't work like that. We need kind of long-lasting applications. So that kind of became the core inspiration for thinking along the lines of how we structured the book.
Yeah, I think the book format lends itself to going deep on a topic, right? Some topics wouldn't fit the book format, but I think serverless is one of those things that forces you to pause and step back and take a look at something holistically. There's plenty of great information out there in formats like you mentioned, Quadra, in blog posts and podcasts, and I think if you're looking for a very specific answer about a specific service or a problem you're working on, those are great for that. Book maybe not so much, but I think when you start off with serverless predominantly, but also when you continue with serverless, having that foundation to build upon is super important. And I think to encapsulate that in various blog posts is very, very difficult. It's kind of difficult to maintain a consistent narrative, whereas a book, it definitely is the perfect format for that.
So it sounds like you both have this belief that serverless is not just for toy projects, it is for serious enterprise-ready applications and the right venue or the right medium for diving really deep into, you know, the enterprise-grade explanations warrants a book as opposed to just a set of articles and podcasts. That makes perfect sense. We're seeing more and more enterprises go all in on serverless. It's becoming, I think it was perceived as a toy project or only for toy projects a little bit ago, but we're seeing it go more mainstream recently. Can you talk about some of the case studies of real enterprises that are in your book?
I was going to say as well, just before we get into the case studies, I think what I found fascinating from my own personal case study at a team I've worked on in service is this idea of like the adjacent possible, right? So within software, we observe lots of trends, you know, things like DevOps, CI/CD, GitOps, you know, automated testing, cost optimization, these sorts of things. Evolvable architectures are a good one as well here. And these things are great, and we've had a lot of success applying them to more sort of traditional serverful architectures. But I think what I realized when serverless came in onto my radar, I saw that as an adjacent possible, something that we could build upon that would enable all these other trends to become more than just trends, to become, you know, practical strategies that we could apply day to day. And I think that's what a lot of enterprises realize when they begin to understand serverless. Hey, this could unlock so much more potential. It'll allow us to iterate very quickly, allow us to scale you know, spiky traffic, handle costs a little bit more tangibly. And that's definitely what we saw from the two case studies in our book. And I think they're both really, really fascinating case studies that have been discussed a lot. So we have PostNL, the postal service of the Netherlands, and we have Taco Bell, obviously a fast food outlet across the world. Two very different different case studies, but absolutely fascinating use cases for serverless.
To add to what Luke mentioned, Kwaja, as you mentioned, there are several articles on how to do things on various things, focusing specifically on Lambda functions or this service or that service. But as I mentioned, when it comes to enterprises,
you need a real case study to show people the possibilities of technology and how to take the technology through different phases. And that's what we wanted to bring into the book. So we were looking at different options. And Taco Bell came in because I knew Robbie for a long time. And every time we meet at reInvent, we used to have long chat, sharing ideas and practices and, you know, better things, structuring teams, etc. So, and his you know, the serverless adoption story at Taco Bell was unique. And I really wanted to bring that in. My initial, you know, doubt was whether, you know, he will be open up for the option. But when I discussed with, you know, Robbie, he was like, oh, I'm in. And that really a unique story showing, you know, what was the state before, why serverless, and how they may start getting on the changes they, you know, played along the way. And even at the end, giving advice, now that we've been through the journey, what can I tell the future generation of, you know, serverless adopters or enterprises? So here are a few things that you need to keep in mind. So that's how it happened. And PostNL, another global brand and a different, you know, a domain altogether, which also kind of, you know, brings in a different flavor for readers to understand how a different kind of set of logistics company, postal company, can adopt serverless. And I now look from the days when I started to talk about EventBridge and event-driven architecture, and that's how I came to understand his use case and their use case. And it was so, you know, I mean, we're honored to have both as part of the book and had, you know, several constructive conversations, how to structure things or how to improve the content. Yeah, so absolutely, you know, happy to have both as our case studies.
These are fairly traditional enterprises that are using serverless for more than just toy projects.
Exactly.
And I remember Robbie telling me that he used to keep getting in trouble with his finance team because every time you would transition a project into full serverless, the cost savings would make it hard for them to meet their spend commit with Amazon.
yeah.
They're, you know, it's a very spiky business, right? So it's serverless really, really well. And that was a really good awakening to just see. I think it was a good leading indicator in terms of, you know, what others are going to see, because people have lots and lots of spiky businesses.
That's an important point we mentioned about cost, because recently I wrote an article about, is serverless expensive or how do you take, you know, cost into account? One of the aspects I touched on that article is like, if you had a non-serverless, you know, ecosystem, containers and things, you know, that's kind of monthly expense because you pay X amount for this particular instant type for this duration. Whereas when it comes to serverless, as you said, the spiky traffic situation can vary the price. So, you know, 1 week could be low. The next week is a new important event that will increase the, you know, the price. So the finance team should have that sort of understanding to know why the variation when we adopt serverless. Yeah, that's a, you know, an important aspect of serverless adoption.
Yeah, absolutely. I like, personally, the consumption-based model, because usually if you're paying more, you're probably using more. And you can write poorly performing or more expensive applications, whatever framework you want, right? So yeah. It's the serverless aspect is, you know, one way to do it. You can write it really well in the serverless world as well. What's still missing in the serverless world, in you guys' opinion? You know, what is the barriers for, what are the biggest barriers for every enterprise to just start with serverless?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Should I be excited or afraid of AI? The answer is yes, it's both.
Things are going to look so different in the next couple years. You will not be ready for the disruptions that are going to come. I'm Jeff Nielsen, host of Digital Disruption, the go-to podcast for technology leaders.
Our generation's conflict, I think, is going to be emotional, not economic.
The companies that are going to win are the ones that have a couple of characteristics.
Stay ahead of the curve with Digital Disruption, available now on your favorite podcast platform.
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I think there's different levels in which you can look at that. I think at a high level, there's definitely still some big barriers, particularly around enterprise adoption. Like, let's face it, it's a departure from traditional engineering techniques, and familiarity is always going to be a safe bet, especially when you've got lots of critical workloads. I think I think part of the barrier therefore is kind of the maximalist approach, you know, one technology or another technology, that, you know, looking at things in a binary way. And so I think serverless perhaps needs to be repositioned as a tool rather than, you know, a particular methodology or a dogma. It's something, it's a means to an end. It's something to get you from a problem to a solution, and it can do that really, really well because it allows you to iterate and evolve your architecture. It is so suitable for that, and you can do that whilst keeping costs low and visibility high. But I think there's also a barrier to entry, right, for engineers. You'll have a group of engineers who have never heard of the term serverless. You might even extend that. They've never worked with the cloud before. They've never worked with AWS before. You know, there's lots of levels to, or barriers to jump over. And that's, you know, that is a big part of why we wrote this book. I remember when I took a new job in the summer of 2019, went through the interview, seemed like a perfect fit, got in there, and they said, right, we're just working out, you know, which team you're going to join. Okay, you're going to join this team now, Luke. We want to implement everything on AWS in serverless. And I said, I have no idea what any of what you just said means. I have never worked with serverless. I've never built anything, certainly not a production workflow on AWS. And I had to frantically search around the internet to try and understand what all these things meant. And so I always say this, that the book that we've written is the book I wish I had on my desk in that summer of 2019, because it would have been that reference manual. How do I get started? How do I massively reduce that barrier to entry? So hopefully our book does contribute to the adoption of serverless, at least at that high level.
Yeah, so interesting that Luke mentioned about his wish he had this book a few years ago. I was at the AWS Heroes Summit last week, and speaking to one of our AWS Heroes, he echoed the same thing, because he almost finished reading the book. And he said, Shane, I wish, you know, I had this book, you know, 4 years ago, because having worked in the industry for these many years, heroes, I mean, people who are in the, you know, the serverless and AWS ecosystem, they know how to do most of the things. So this is, again, proving the point that this book is out there helping, you know, people who are just onboarding onto serverless or going through the process. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the points that are worth underscoring in the answers I heard so far are, we're not zealots that are trying to tell everybody that you should just go serverless blindly. You're trying to make sure it's rather than serverless adoption, you're trying to eliminate the serverless aversion to combat the familiarity bias. And you're trying to do that. One of the reasons you see the barrier is there isn't enough educational material out there to dive deep. And the book that people wish they had when they started serverless can help eliminate some of that that cognitive dissonance that people have, which stops them from, right? And I totally empathize with this. Like, if I take a back-end server-side programming job and I show up for my job the first day and they're like, do serverless? Like, wait, server-side job. What do you mean serverless? So it could be quite confusing.
That's a valid point. And we have a chapter exactly for assessing the readiness for serverless at an enterprise server. In there, we talk about, you know, the use cases that are fit for serverless and use cases that may not be fit for serverless, and how do you identify and what can you do about it. And also, I mentioned somewhere that the serverless first does not mean serverless must. Yep. So there are principles, starting from domain-driven design all the way down, that enterprises need to be aware in order to make it, profitable or enabling and technology. And that's where, as Luke mentioned, the knowledge or the education should come. People should understand the characteristics and capabilities of serverless before they dive too deep in and start, developing solutions.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things we noticed as we were sort of deciding to write the book and even drafting out, the rough outline and the proposal and the content, was that there was a trend towards a lot of myths and uncertainty around serverless, particularly in some of the more unexplored topics. So security being one, there would seem to be a constant question around, is serverless secure? Do I need to do anything to secure it? Does it actually benefit my application security? Other ones being, can I develop serverless locally? Can I test serverless? Is it really, really expensive? And I think what we tried to do was not just demystify those points, but to turn them into opportunities, because I think that's where serverless really comes into its own. It's not necessarily just about saying, hey, no, like security is a thing with serverless. It's about saying there's a lot of potential here. You can kind of adapt your security processes around serverless. Same with local development and testing. Okay, you can't do things the way you used to, but maybe that's a good thing. Maybe you can actually take out, Sheen mentioned the software development site lifecycle. Perhaps you can take out a few extraneous steps from that and make that a lot quicker. So now your iteration loops are actually quicker than they were before serverless. So yeah, it was about demystifying a lot of those things and about education, but also saying, hey, look, if you look at it from this slightly different angle, maybe you'll stop thinking about serverless versus how things were and start thinking about serverless and how things can be.
I think that fits really well with your notion that serverless is a tool rather than just a methodology or philosophy. If you see it as a philosophy, you'll litigate whether it's secure or whether it's performant or not. If you see it as a tool, you'll check fit against the specific use cases that you have in mind, and that's, I think, where you're getting to, Sheen, with the criteria that you have to assess which workloads are best fit for serverless. Which chapter is that? You remember off the top of your head?
Chapter two.
Okay.
Enterprise readiness. Just to add to that, I often kind of give a different view when at serverless, because we've been through the all sorts of definitions for serverless as a word or dogma, doctrine, spectrum, etc. But thing is, services like SQS, S3, managed services existed before the term serverless was even a thing, right? No one had any issues because they considered us applications invoked via APIs, etc. When Lambda functions came along, function as a service, that's when people realize, oh, to execute my code, I don't need to own a box of my own or a container of, that I want. I can just upload and the magic happens. So that's how the notion of the serverless started to take shape. And of course, there are, a bunch of other things like scale to zero, et cetera. Even with SQS and S3, we had those things, except you pay for the storage, right? So the way I kind of often convey is like,
when you think of serverless as, you know, technology, you bring in all the managed services. Basically, you are collaborating these managed services and stitching with the infrastructure as code. So that means already you had managed services, infrastructure as code, and you as the engineer in the picture, and who you are building the solution for your stakeholders. So they are in the picture. So that's why I often, you know, convey it as a technology ecosystem, right? So because everyone is part of it, including all the core primitive services and, you know, the tools and frameworks and all sorts of things that we talk about. Yeah, that's a kind of, you know, different take. Just to think it's just a whole piece, not just a, you know, serverless as a word or something like that.
My favorite interaction with, you know, some of the enterprises that say, I am not on serverless. We don't do serverless here. We're fully on EC2. And I always ask them, where do you think your AMIs come from? Right? Like, they're coming from S3.
Exactly.
What about IAM? You use IAM, right? Like, how many units of IAM did you configure? And what's your monthly minimum for IAM? Like, you know, so it's kind of the best thing about serverless technologies is they do blend into the background.
Yeah.
And again, they're not the right fit in every single application. And that's where the tools like the one you mentioned come into play. We'll do a couple of really rapid fire questions before we end. And we'll switch off. Like each one of you can pick, you know, whichever one you want. But 3-part question, rapid fire answers. What advice do you have for a team that is evaluating going into serverless for the first time? They're a hardcore shop that has, you know, that believes they've never touched serverless. What advice do you have for them?
I'd say just go ahead and try it out. Identify something that you're going to run in production, but is fairly low criticality, and just try it out. Forget the marketing terms, forget everything you've heard before. Just try it out, see how it feels, and if you evaluate it and it's great for you, then brilliant. And if not, you've not wasted too much time. So yeah, I'd say just go ahead, try it out. It'll be good.
I will add one extra bit to Luke's answer. You know, I mentioned about the capabilities and characteristics. I think understand some of those, you know, what it is capable of, then go experiment, learn. Yeah.
I like that. I think it's like, take it for a test drive and be clinical about your evaluation criteria.
Exactly.
That's what being a good engineer is about, right?
Yeah. What we should have said was buy the book and read it. That should be the first thing that you do. But we're not obviously not good salespeople, so we didn't think.
Well, that's why you're good engineers.
Yeah,
it's hard to do too many. Like, it's hard to be good at too many things at once. You know.
Yes, it's very different.
But what about if you're in the middle of adopting serverless? What would you do there? What advice would you have for an enterprise that's in the middle of adopting serverless?
I think probably stick with it. Like maybe you're starting to climb that kind of that slightly steep learning curve. Maybe you're starting to have a bit of regret. Maybe you want to go back to the familiar tools and services you've used before. But I would say stick with it. And if things aren't working, if you're trying to map your existing processes onto a new technology, that's probably where you're getting a lot of friction. So look at those. And there's loads of stuff about that in the book. If it's security, if it's testing, if it's development, operation, that's what we've tried to do in the book is really try to help you understand how to build the best processes and workflows around serverless. You know, your use cases, you get in there and implement those as you see fit. But we'll help you kind of look at all the things around that so that you get a nice, efficient workflow all the way through. So, yeah, stick with it and look at potentially where you're getting a lot of friction in terms of the way you're building and the way you're approaching your serverless application.
Yeah. whatever Luke said, plus, as you iterate, improve. Okay? Keep improving. So I'm a great believer in continuous refactoring, especially when it comes to cloud and serverless technologies, because things are changing all the time. not just technology in a serverless or AWS, the entire, you know, the technology around us is changing. So that's why you need to keep that open mind of refactor. So we talk about that in the, you know, the final chapter, the ways we can, you know, sort of bring that mindset in, keep refactoring. So that's important. And as enterprises, you know, going through the adoption, put the sort of guardrails and principles and practices in place so that, you know, they are improving all the time, not going back. So that's, you know, critical for the adoption.
Seems like, you know, when you go from, you start with serverless aversion and you take it for a test drive and you start mastering the tool and you get clinical about the criteria with which you evaluate its efficacy. And then you have to kind of keep going in the middle stage where you keep mastering the tool, because as you master the tool, you'll learn more about whether or not it's a fit. And you got to make your criteria even more clinical than before, because as you become master at it, you don't want to throw it at everything either. And that's where that checklist comes into play.
Yeah. Now that you mentioned test drives, I can't stop thinking, like, you know, once you own the car, you know, what's the, you know, the optimum, you know, speed that gives you the maximum mileage, you know, what tire pressures you need to maintain. So, you know, thinking shifts to those sort of ways, like, you know, how often you need to change your oil and all sorts of things, especially with the traditional, you know, gas-powered cars.
No, absolutely. I think, you know, mastery is an interesting thing. You can always keep getting better. You know, once you take your car out on the racetrack, which will, like, if we'll push this analogy further, we'll call this the production. You get to learn the limits of that technology. And sometimes, you know, when I'm on a racetrack, I learned that my car could do a lot more than what I thought it could do, especially when I'm not the one driving it. If it's an instructor driving it, I say, holy cow. So taking inspiration from the experts like you, reading your book, and, you know, I think belonging to a community so you can address, you know, not just how do I use serverless for this, but does it actually fit or not? And having that discourse can also help people. Where do people go to find this book? How do I get one? Or can I get a digital copy? I mean, I already know the answer, but I think for the audience, you know, how do they get this book?
Yeah, I think all the usual outlets. So you can either get a digital copy or a hard copy. All the usual outlets, Amazon, your favorite bookstore. And also what's amazing is if you do have access to the O'Reilly Learning Platform, you'll have access to this book and all the other amazing books, some of which we do actually allude to and reference in the book. So yeah, that's a really great platform if you can get access to that.
Yeah, and also another, you know, the case studies we talked about. So there is a link in the, you know, the book that you can use to download, and then you can share with your team, you know, study it, learn it.
Yeah, I made the potentially a mistake, but I bought the digital copy and then I realized I can't get you guys to sign it for me.
It's a common mistake. Yeah.
But I'm sure we'll drop the links of some of the options, some of the ways to get this. Shane, Luke, it's been great talking to you guys about this. It's such an honor to meet the two authors of a great book. Thank you for writing this. Thank you for, you know, having a not so overzealous approach, the clinical approach for evaluating serverless rather than just blindly doing it. It's a great book. I've personally read it. I really enjoyed it. And I'd highly recommend people to grab a copy and read it, regardless of what stage your enterprise is in, because it gives you a clinical way to assess how to make most use of this tool. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, thank you, Kawaja, for, you know, taking your time and chatting with us. And yes, you know, go out, explore the book. And something we haven't, you know, talked about much is every chapter has an expert and their opinions shared unedited. It's, you know, so it's a great insight into various topics that we discuss in the book. So, yeah. You know, absolute pleasure chatting to you. And I love your Momentos theme, believe in serverless. That is, you know, the critical when it comes to serverless adoption, because, you know, Sydney's believing, and, you know, when they believe, magic will happen. So, thank you.
Yeah, and if you do go out and buy the book, which we obviously really hope you do, we love hearing what you've thought about it, good or bad. We love to hear what you're thinking, what you've learned from it, and we love having those discussions. So yeah, reach out to us on Twitter or LinkedIn, or even better, if you see us in person at a conference, we'd absolutely love to chat with you. So that would be absolutely brilliant. I thank you so much, Khwaja, for taking the time to do this interview. I've really enjoyed it. I could go on for another hour, I think, but we'll leave it there.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.